This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. The Christian life is a journey of highs and lows. The book of James leads us along this journey to help us understand how to navigate life with a vibrant faith. As believers, when we stumble into sin, our walk can get difficult. Today, Pastor Sam Horn will begin a sermon titled, Triumphing Over Temptation. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
And we are beginning a new section in chapter 1, beginning in verse 13 and going all the way through verse 18. And as we look at this section, if James were here with us this morning, I think he would warn us that this is a particularly tricky part of the trail to navigate. And very early on in the journey, this comes up. So remember our analogy for James is we're on a hike with James. We're on a trail. We're on a journey. We're not on a trip. We're on a journey, and there are things that James is going to intentionally build into the journey along the way to kind of keep us on track. But more than just keeping us on track, he has a very big objective. And he's designed things into the journey. And so when you hit a part of the journey that is hard, it's hard intentionally. It's sort of like some of the books in the Bible that are designed by the author to kind of help you discover something. Like the book of Ecclesiastes, for example, is a book about wisdom. And the thing you know about wisdom is that it's not easy to find. And so Ecclesiastes is intentionally designed by Solomon to be difficult. And you have to work hard. You have to hunt to find the wisdom. So there are things like that in James. James is going to design the book in a way that as you read through the book and you think through carefully, you're going to hit things at certain points along the trail. And initially, you're going to go, I'm not sure why this is here. And then sometimes you're going to hit things and you're going to say, this is a really hard part of the trail to navigate. And this is the section we're in. It's a hard part of the trail to navigate. But James is doing this intentionally because this part of the trail is essential to cultivate a living faith that you're going to display to a dying world. That's the theme of James, putting your faith to work. And how do you put your faith to work? You display it to the world. And so what kind of a faith do you want to display to the world? What kind of a faith is going to make an impact? What kind of a faith is going to make a difference in a dying world? And the answer to that for James is very simple. It is a living faith. And he's already told us what that looks like. And he's going to tell us again and again and again that a living faith is marked by three things. You remember what the three things were? We've said them repeatedly together. A living faith is wholehearted. It is single-focused, and it is fully trusting. A living faith is wholehearted. It is single-focused. James is going to talk about double-mindedness, double-souledness, double-heartedness. A living faith is not like that. A living faith is wholehearted. It's single-focused. And it is fully trusting. Can we say that together? I'd like us to just make sure we have that in our mind. So let's say it this way. A living faith for a dying world is a faith that is wholehearted, single-focused, and fully trusting. All right, so as we started reading James, and he's talking about cultivating this kind of a faith, he immediately introduces one of the ways in which God cultivates that in your life and in my life, and it is through trials. This is a magnificent tool that God uses not just to cultivate the faith that he is looking for, but to display it. And the thing that is required for that to work, if a trial is going to produce what God intends for it to produce in your life and in mine, a wholehearted, single-focused, truly trusting, fully trusting faith, if that's really going to be the outcome of the trial, then what is required in the middle of the trial? And James says, I'm going to give it to you in one word, and it's the word endurance. There is a great reward at the end of the trial for those who endure. In verse 12, they get a crown. And the crown is described as the crown of life. But before you get to the crown, you have to endure. And James is going to let you know that enduring a trial requires two things. Number one, it requires a certain kind of wisdom. And James is going to tell you about that wisdom up in verse 4, or verse 5, rather. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. Now, he's going to introduce wisdom to you here. And if you remember, wisdom in James is not just good sense. It's not just the idea of, you know, I'm trying to decide, do I need to go here? Do I need to go there? And I need wisdom about that. We do need wisdom, and the Bible talks about that, but that's really not the point that James is making when he says, if you lack wisdom, ask God. He's actually talking about a specific wisdom that came down from heaven, and it does things. In chapter 3, he's going to actually call it wisdom from above. And we noted as we went through that portion of scripture that when James is talking about wisdom, he is talking about a particular body of wisdom that God gave to his people in contrast to all of the other wisdoms of the nations. So if you go back to the Old Testament, God's nation Israel had a wisdom, and it was different than the wisdom of the Egyptians. It was different than the wisdom of the Canaanites. It was different than the wisdom of the Babylonians. It was a unique wisdom, and the wisdom that God had given to Israel was located in a book called the Torah. And that Torah is your Old Testament. And James is adding this into the mix. He's saying there is a wisdom that God has given you, and if you need help in navigating a trial, you need to go to that wisdom as opposed to all of the other wisdoms around you. It's the Psalm 1, verse 1. Blessed is the man who does not walk according to the counsel of the ungodly. He doesn't sit in the seat of scornful. He doesn't stand in the way of sinners. But his delight is in this other wisdom, in the law of the Lord. And so that's what James is talking about. If you're going to navigate a trial and you're going to endure, you need to go to the right wisdom. You need to go to God's wisdom. And then the second thing you need is you need to go to the right place, but you need to go in the right way. And the way you get wisdom from that source is you have to come with a heart that is not divided. You have to come in faith. Not doubting, and the idea there is not limping between two things. You can't come to God and say, listen, I want to come to your word, and I want to check out what it says, and then I'm going to go to the other wisdoms, and I'm going to check out what they say, and then I'm going to decide which makes better sense. You say, well, who in the world would do that? Israel did that throughout the Old Testament. Remember this? God said, I'm going to give you rain, and I'm going to be the one that sends rain, and to get rain in the book of Leviticus, this is how you get it. You ask me. And there was a period of time during Elijah's ministry where God didn't send rain for 3.5 years. And you know why he didn't send rain. And the people were dying. I mean, literally, the economy was in shambles. Famine was rampant. Death was everywhere. And these people who were desperate for rain had been introduced to another wisdom. A princess named Jezebel brought another wisdom to Israel and said, listen, I have another way for you to get rain. There's another source of rain, and his name is Baal, Baal. And there are 400 prophets and 450 priests, and they can teach you this wisdom. And Israel was now caught in the middle. Do we go back to our wisdom that God gave us to get rain, or do we go to this new wisdom to get rain? And that's what was going on when Elijah stood on the mountain and says, how long are you going to limp between these two wisdoms? And you say, well, that would never happen to us. It happens to us all the time. And so that's why James talks this way. If you are going to navigate a trial and you're going to endure that trial, then you're going to need endurance. And endurance requires two things. You have to go to the right wisdom, and you have to go in the right way. You have to go with an undivided heart. You have to go with a wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith. You see how James introduces that concept? All right, so that's what happened, and that's what James has introduced you to in the first 12 verses. But in verse 13, there is something new that comes in. And he's going to introduce an important part of the journey that you need to know about, because this is a real and present danger to the cultivation of a living faith. It is going to come at wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith in ways that you don't anticipate. And here's the idea that James is going to present to you. He is going to remind you that the circumstances that make the trial that God intends to use to build your faith, somebody else is going to try to use those same circumstances and that same trial for a very different agenda. He's not talking about a new thing. Here is a trial that has come upon you. Peter describes a trial in words that are very graphic. It is a fierce, it is a fiery, it is a painful set of circumstances that exists, and it is prolonged. And James says when God allows that in your life, he intends to use those circumstances to build you, and he's giving you the wisdom to do it. But there is an enemy who's going to come, and he's going to use those same circumstances, and he's going to use them to tempt you. That's why in the book of James chapter 1, the word for trial in the first part of chapter 1 and the word for temptation in the second part of chapter 1 are the same. It's the same set of circumstances, and God is using those circumstances to build you, but Satan is going to use those circumstances to try to destroy you. He doesn't want to build your faith. He wants to damage your faith. He doesn't want to draw you close to God and close to the wisdom. He wants to turn you away from God and distance you from the wisdom. And so he's going to take the circumstances that God designed to pressure you and to build you so that you would run to the wisdom. Satan is going to use those same circumstances to try to tempt you. And so James is now going to talk about how we can arm ourselves so that a trial does not turn into a temptation. So I want to talk today about how James arms us so that trials do not become temptations. They turn into triumphs. And there are five concepts that James has for us this morning. So let me give them to you very quickly. Number one, James starts with a strong exhortation. Look at verse 13. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. The word temptation occurs five times in this little segment. So it's clearly where James is headed. He's sort of said, okay, I've talked to you about these circumstances, and I've helped you to see what God is up to. This trial is intended to build you. And if you will go to the wisdom in the right way with an undivided heart, this trial will result in life. It'll bring forth life. That's verse 12. And then he turns around and he says, now, I want to talk about those same circumstances, but I'm going to use a different concept. And five times he introduces us to the concept of temptation. So clearly, he has made a shift. And then I want you to notice a practical observation about this. Whoever he's talking about is right in the middle of this trial, and it is about to become a temptation. He's right in the middle of it. The trial has come upon him. The temptation has come upon him, and the circumstances are the same. So the circumstances haven't changed. Here's an individual, and he's walking along, and he encounters a trial. And as he is in the middle of that trial, it starts to turn into a temptation. And that's what James wants you to gather. As you go through a trial and you thank God for the wisdom he's given you, be alert, because that trial can turn into a temptation. Trials are how God tests our faith to reveal its true condition. Temptations test our character. If a trial tests our faith, temptation is going to test our character, and it's going to reveal the true loyalty of our heart. So that James is going to give us in this exhortation a personal word. Let no one say when he's tempted, "I am being tempted of God." In other words, James is going to say, here's a temptation. This trial that is upon you is now a temptation, and there are things that are going on you're struggling with, and there is a hidden temptation. There's like a temptation inside the temptation, and that temptation is to blame God for the temptation. In other words, Lord, if you hadn't sent me this trial, then I wouldn't be tempted. And so the whole reason I'm struggling with the temptation and I'm not overcoming the temptation is because you sent me the trial, you sent me the temptation, and therefore you're somehow to blame. And you would say, well, who does that? Well, the human race began with that, didn't it, in the story of Adam and Eve? God sent them a wonderful opportunity to display their love and their obedience to God in the form of a tree with fruit. And you know the story. By the end of the day, that tree, that wonderful opportunity that Adam and Eve had to show grateful adoration and grateful loyalty to the God who had given them everything, that tree had turned into a temptation because Satan had come and used it against them, and they had fallen into sin. And then when God went looking for them to restore them, and he started asking them questions, do you remember what Adam said? And it said, well, God, listen, the reason this all happened, I'm just going to tell you, I'll be up straight with you. Here's why it happened. Her. And he's talking about who? Eve. Adam's talking about Eve. Remember, you remember what he first said about Eve? I mean, when he woke up and Eve was there, you remember what he said? Wow! That's in the Hebrew. That's literally... He sang this amazing song of praise. And you know what he's saying to God about Eve? Her. Well, who created her? God. It's a subtle blame shift. Adam's blaming Eve, but he's actually blaming God. If you hadn't created her, we wouldn't have been in this mess, and I wouldn't have had to make this choice. And then he looks at Eve, and Eve points to who? The serpent. If he hadn't made this creature, then Satan wouldn't have been able to use him to tempt me. So at the end of the day, all of this blame shifting went right back to God. And James says, when you are in the middle of this kind of a temptation, don't do that. Don't open up your mouth and use your tongue to sin in this way. He's going to talk a lot about the tongue in the book, and he's sort of setting you up here. He's saying, look, don't say this about God. And don't do that, because it's actually a massive deception. When you say this about God, it is a massive deception. You didn't just buy into the deception of the temptation. You bought into an even bigger deception, in the sense that you think God is behind all of this. It is a massive deception, and it is an erroneous conclusion. It's not just massively deceptive, it's incredibly wrong. It is an erroneous conclusion. And here's why. It is absolutely wrong, because God cannot be tempted with evil. There is nothing in God's nature that is evil, so therefore there is nothing in him that would ever be allured by a temptation. You can throw temptation at God all day long, and it will never faze him, because there's nothing inside him that is ever going to desire that thing that is wrong. You have misjudged God's nature. There is nothing inside of God that would ever respond to anything that's inside a temptation. God, in essence, is untemptable. Now, that doesn't mean that God isn't going to ever see temptation and hear temptation. It's just saying when you throw temptation at God, you can throw all the temptation you want at God, and you can tempt him as long as you want and as hard as you want and as deep as you want, and he will never sin because there's nothing in him that will ever be attracted to do that. He's untemptable. And then James says it's not just a massive deception and an erroneous conclusion, it's actually a wicked charge. It's a wicked charge. You are telling God, or accusing God rather, of doing what Satan does. You are actually accusing God of sin. You are assigning to God the very kind of motive and the very kind of action that Satan does. And so James says, before you even get to understand how temptation works, you need to make sure that you don't think a certain way. And the only way you're not going to think that is by going back to the right wisdom that tells you about God. There is a wisdom that God gave you, and it tells you about who he is and what he's like. And when you depart from that wisdom, you have made an erroneous conclusion, all right? And that's the profound reason why we're not supposed to do this. All right, so here's the next question. James says, all right, if temptation doesn't come from God, if the trial God sent you to build you turns into a temptation, don't say that came because of God. So if temptation doesn't come from God, where does it come from? And that's the second big idea. There is a sobering explanation about how temptation works. And it's like this. James is going to talk about the source, and then he's going to talk about the course of how temptation works. And he's going to tell us that temptation comes out of our individualized, inordinate desires. So he says it this way. Each person is tempted. You and I have individual desires that are tailor-made to us. Temptation, you could say it this way. Temptation is a personalized experience, each person with his own desire. The word desire there, some of your Bibles would have the word lust. It's the idea of a strong craving. Something that you just crave, that just rises up inside you, a compelling desire for something that is prohibited by God. It either desires something that God told you not to do or to have, or it is repulsed by something that God told you to do or to have. But in any case, temptation is a craving, a strong craving from within. So let me give you this illustration. Have you ever been in bed at night and you wake up and it's like 2 a.m. and everything is just right? I mean, I like the room to be really cold, and I like the blankets to be really high, and I like to burrow down in the blankets, and I have the pillows just right, and they're just arranged just so, and you're just in there, and all of a sudden you wake up. And you're like, I gotta go back to sleep. But you're thinking about something.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. We'll continue this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker, Dr. Sam Horn, is the pastor for preaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. Join us for Sunday morning worship at 9 a.m. or 10:45 a.m. You can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you have any questions about PBC, please email radio@pbcpowdersville.org. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.